That's a picture of I'm from Kashmir, which is in northern India, the Indian side, of course. And I went on a trip with my parents last summer, around July 23rd, and we went up to this valley called Aru, ARU, and it's at about 12,000 feet. And this is one of the streams, the melt from the glacial water in the Himalayas, which has cut this valley. So it's a blast fly fishing there, which I enjoy doing. So today I'm going to be talking about how to encode a logical qubit into six physical qubits. And this is joint work with Mark Wilde, Agnes Reshkov, Isaac Kremsky, and Daniel Adar at USC. Mark has already graduated. He just got his PhD this year. In fact, he is in Toronto right now, attending the IEEE IT conference. And then Agnes has also moved to greener pastures in Spain, but I don't know exactly which group. Isaac actually left QIP. He is actually doing gerontology at USC right now. And I'm sure everybody knows Daniel Adar. The dude has 100 papers or something. The archive, it's insane. So the outline, I'm going to be roughly talking about two portions in this talk. On the first part, I'm going to focus on the six-qubit code. So it is an error-correcting code that encodes one logical qubit into six, and it corrects an arbitrary single-qubit error. So I'll give a brief overview of quantum error correction, present the stabilizer generators for this code, and give a construction for the unitary encoding circuit. And then I'll describe how we take advantage of the degeneracy within the six-qubit code and convert it into a subsystem code. It actually turns out that this is the smallest non-trivial example for subsystem code that corrects an arbitrary single-qubit error and utilizes one gauge qubit. And at the end, I'm going to talk about, in this section, give you a proof for the non-existence of a CSS six-qubit code. And it's a proof via contradiction. And this construction was actually done by Agnian. In the second portion, I'll talk about the entanglement-assisted paradigm for quantum error-correcting codes. Here, there's a sender and a receiver, Alice and Bob, and they share an EBIT between them. And they're encoding one logical qubit into six and correcting an arbitrary single-qubit error. It also actually turns out that this 6131 code, the one at the end stands for one EBIT, actually is globally equivalent to the Steen code. And I'll show you a simple proof of that. So this section will start with a brief overview of entanglement-assisted quantum error-correcting codes. We'll look at the construction for the 6131 code, the stabilizer generators, and look at the unitary encoding circuit. And towards the end, there's a proposition in the paper for the non-existence of N131 CSS codes for n less than 6. However, I'm not going to give a proof for this because the flavor of this proof is very similar to the one for the non-existence of a CSS six-qubit code. So in general, what are quantum error-correcting codes? So an NK quantum error-correcting code, where we take K logical qubits, so that's your state phi. It undergoes some encoding unitary, okay, and you encode it into n physical qubits. And then it passes through some noisy quantum channel. And then hopefully, with some appropriate recovery procedure, D, that involves measurement and applying the appropriate correction, we hope to recover the state phi back. One of the nice things about quantum error correction is one can take the set of continuous errors and actually discretize them into the set N sub U, where U, the notation stands for, where U is a binary string of length 2n. Okay. So as an example, and I'll use my hockey stick here, let's say I wanted to write the string XYZ. So a bit flip on qubit 1, a Y error on qubit 2, and a face flip on qubit 3. So what you do is you divide the string into two parts. So wherever you have, let's say, qubit 1 has the X error, you put a 0 on the Z side and a 1 on the X. And when you have a Y error, you put a 1 on the Z side and the X on the and 1 on the X side. And when you have Z, you put 1 on the Z side and 0 on the X side. Okay, so this will be kind of nice to think about this notation this way. So, so shortly after the construction of the first quantum error correcting codes, a general description was found by Daniel of a broad class of codes called the stabilizer codes. Okay. These codes are described by commuting set of operators. The set of operators determine the properties of code, the encoding and decoding unitaries, and the protocol for error detection and correction. And moreover, there's this nice analogy between quantum codes and classical linear codes over GA4. Okay. So this analogy allows quantum codes to be constructed from classical codes with similar performance. And virtually all useful QECs that we know of are stabilizer codes. So one of the nice ingredients to think about in quantum error correcting codes is a symplectic product, symplectic inner product. So here we take two binary strings of length 2n, and the inner product gives you a single bit out. And the way the product goes is, so as I showed in the similar slide, you have strings z and x, and what you do is you take the inner product of z with x prime transpose, and you add it modulo 2 with the inner product modulo 2 of x and z prime transpose. So it turns out that this analogy between Pauli operators and these binary strings is the following. That is, if we take nu and nv and they commute, if and only if the symplectic inner product between these two binary strings is 0, and they anti-commute if it's equal to 1. Okay, so then an nk quantum error correcting code is now described by an n minus k by 2n parity check matrix H. Okay, and its row space, BH, is just an isotropic subspace of Z2 to n. So isotropic subspace here just means that the operators, the Pauli operators corresponding to it, commute with each other. Okay. So this project actually started out in Daniel's class. I was taking his quantum error correcting course 2 years ago, and towards the end of the course, he wanted the class to do a project, and so he said, why don't you go ahead and find a 6-qubit code? And one of the main motivations was that, you know, you open Michael Nielsen and Isaac Chuang's book, and you look at this beautiful, perfect 5-qubit code, and you look, yeah, got it. And suddenly there's a jump to the Steen code, the 7-qubit code, and there's this gap in the middle. Well, what happened to 6, okay? And unfortunately, Daniel at the time did not know that actually in their paper, Caldebank, Rain, Shore, Sloan, actually have an example of a 6-qubit code. Okay. And the way we, actually it was Isaac who worked on finding this 6-qubit code, and he actually did an algorithmic search of the space. And so the way you would do it is just take a parity check matrix and randomly assign zeros and ones, and then look at all single qubit errors. And you put certain constraints on this parity check matrix, that is, you know, the rows should be independent and so on and so forth. And then you look at all single qubit errors, and if a certain parity check matrix doesn't satisfy that, then it's not a valid parity check matrix, you throw it out, you keep doing that again. So you just apply a brute force approach. And that's sort of what Isaac did, and was able to find these set of stabilizer generators for the 6-qubit code. So these are commuting generators, and once again, you can write in this symplectic form, where you have the Z sub matrix and the X sub matrix, okay, and you do this and you fill it out the same way as I described in the previous slides. So then now a code space is the set of all binary strings U whose symplectic inner product with the rows of this parity check matrix equals 0. Okay. You can read more about it in Daniel's thesis. So the code space now is defined as a simultaneous plus one eigenspace of stabilizer operators. And the error correcting conditions translate as follows. So your error correcting code can correct a correctable error set S if given two distinct binary strings here, which now correspond to two distinct errors, you get two distinct syndromes when you apply the parity check. Or it's the case that the code is actually degenerate. That is, two different errors lead to the same syndrome, which is something that we don't see in the classical world. It's something very peculiar to quantum error correcting codes. And the way you find syndromes is just you take the parity check matrix and apply, for example, If, for example, you want to find the syndrome corresponding to an error on the fourth qubit. So you just take subtractive product row by row with that string. So like I said, decoding involves measuring the error syndrome, okay, which is a simultaneous eigenvector of the stabilizer generators. So what are the properties of stabilizer codes then? So we see that stabilizer codes correspond to an isotropic, that is a dual-containing classical code over a symplectic space. The error-corrected conditions are almost the same as classical, except for the existence of this degeneracy. Okay. And just as in classical codes, the correction consists of measuring an error syndrome and then performing an appropriate correction recovery.
I didn't understand that sentence. The code corresponds to an isotropic that is dual containing classical code. What are those? What does that mean?
Dual containing means that there's a all the code words that are orthogonal are contained within it. Okay, so that's dual containing.
Weakly subdual in the language of protocol.
So how do we obtain the unitary encoding circuit for this? So you start out with the stabilizer generators, okay, on the right side, you know, S, you know, these five stabilizer generators, write it in the symplectic form. And then through a series of matrix reduction, which kind of look like Gaussian elimination, you reduce it in the form on the left side. Okay? And then in the Heisenberg picture, these columns correspond to ancillas. And the last column here corresponds to your information qubit. Okay? And the kind of matrix reductions that we're allowed to do are Clifford gates. And so if I'm applying a C-naught from qubit I to qubit J, so think of columns, so what you're going to do is you're going to add column I to column J in the X submatrix, okay? But you're going to add column J to column I in the Z submatrix. Okay? A Hadamard on qubit I swaps column I in the Z submatrix to the one in the X submatrix, and a phase gate on qubit I adds a column I in the X submatrix to column J in the Z submatrix. And then a swap gate interchanges columns I and J in the respective Z and X submatrices. So you go through these gates, and then you end up with this unencoded stabilizer, okay? And then your encoding unitary are these gates applied in reverse, okay? So when I was doing these matrix reduction, the first thing I did was I applied a Hadamard on this guy, and then a C naught from qubit 1 to qubit 3, 4, 5, and so on and so forth. Okay. So it actually turns out that one of the most general ways to decompose a Hilbert space is through a direct sum. And moreover, the most general way one can encode a logical qubit into physical qubits is via subsystems rather than subspaces. And what happens is in subsystem codes, you break down your Hilbert space into this tensor product structure where the information qubit that you like to protect resides in Hilbert space A, and your Hilbert space B is your gauge Hilbert space. Okay. So now our encoding unitary transforms the unencoded six qubit into subsystem HA, okay? And we convert our fourth unencoded qubit into a gauge qubit, and we just consider it noisy. Okay, and so then the errors X4, Z4 have no effect on that quantum formation, and then the encoding unitary transform these errors into X4, Z4, Z6, and which then generate the gauge subgroup. And so errors within this gauge subgroup are absorbed passively. We don't have to worry about them. They don't affect our quantum information, which is living on the sixth qubit. Okay. And what is nice about subsystem codes is that they lead to fewer stabilizer generators. So earlier we had five, and now we're reduced to four, which means that when we do error recovery, we have to measure fewer stabilizer generators. Okay. And in fact, even with this reduced number of stabilized generators, this code is able to correct an arbitrary single qubit error. And moreover, we found out that this code actually saturates the subsystem singleton bound, which I don't know much about, but you can read it in Sarfelli and Kleppenecker's paper on the archive. And actually, after the paper was posted in the archive, Saleh, who works under Kleppenecker, actually pointed that he had posed this as an open question to find the smallest non-trivial subsystem code, and we had actually answered it without actually knowing that he had posed it. So that was kind of nice. So now I'm going to talk about the non-existence of a 6-qubit CSS code. So the proposition is that there's no 6-qubit code that encodes 1 qubit, possesses the CSS structure, and corrects an arbitrary single qubit error. Okay? So I'm going to prove this via contradiction. Okay? So suppose that there is a 6-qubit code that possesses the CSS structure. Okay, so if that's the case, we're going to divide the proof into several cases. So in the first case, if it has a CSS form, then your stabilizer generators can be all of type X or all of type Z. It's called Calderbank, Shor, and Steen form. It's a dual containing code, and you basically have a matrix, and you arrange the parity check matrix in a particular way, which I can talk about it when we get to the entanglement.
Just said before you asked the question, which is that the stabilizer, the generators are either all X's or all Z's.
Yeah. So if you take case one, for example, the all generators of type X or Z, then if you have an error of type X, we can't correct for it because it commutes with all the stabilizer generators, so we won't be able to detect it. Similarly, if we have all the generators of type Z, we won't be able to correct the Z type errors. So it can't be of this one. Okay, so what about the case where the first generator is of type X and the rest are of type Z? Well, if that's the case, then let's look at column one, where we have an identity on qubit one and the rest of our type Z. Then a Z1 error goes uncorrected. So if it goes uncorrected and it commutes with all these stabilizers, maybe it is a part of the stabilizer. But if that's the case, then it just gives us a trivial code. And we suppose also that we assume that a code is not trivial. Then what if it's the case that you have two qubit you have a single generators of type X where there are no identities and the rest are of type Z. So then you look at all the errors, Z1, Z2, Z1, Z3, Z1, Z4, Z1, Z5, and Z1, Z6. These are all independent, and you'll find that these all commute. But yet, we have found 5 commuting Z type, whereas we assume that our generator, we only had 4 Z type generators. And case three, then, we consider 2 generators of type X and the rest of type Z. And once again, this breaks down into different cases. Okay. So I'm not going to go into all the different cases and bore you with it. But basically, you analyze it follows. You look at type IX over here, XI and XX. And then you reason how each of these columns are going to pair. And in each one of the cases, you apply the same sort of argument where you talk about errors Z1, Z2, Z3, Z4, Z5, Z6, 2-qubit Z errors. Either that will happen or you'll end up with a trivial code. So this is the constructive proof for the non-existence of a CSS 6-qubit code. Then I'm going to talk about entanglement-assisted coding. So in this paradigm, we have two parties, Alice and Bob. Alice is the sender, Bob is the receiver. So this is Alice's side up here, about the yellow dotted line. And this is Bob's side. And it's assumed that Alice and Bob share an EBIT between them. These are clean, pure EBITs, no errors on them, at least not on the EBIT that Bob possesses. And what Alice would like to do is, with the help of 4 ancillas, she'd like to encode her qubit psi through some encoding unitary, get 6 qubits, and then she sends it through a noisy quantum channel. And then Bob gets those 6 qubits along with his half of the EBIT, and then through an appropriate recovery procedure, is able to get psi back. So he's able to measure the stabilizer generators and get psi back. Okay. So the place where the entanglement-assisted coding differs is that the generators that Alice starts up with need not be commuting. Okay. And she'll just use these non-commuting generators to come up with an encoding unitary on her side. But what is important is that when Bob has to do find the correct syndromes, he has to measure the actual stabilizer generators. That is the whole commuting set. And he's able to do that by using his half of the EBIT. So he resolves the anti-commutativity by using his half of an EBIT. Okay, so it turns out that we can establish a simple extension of the usual stabilizer formalism to describe entanglement-assisted codes. So we again establish a stabilizer, okay, which is a subgroup of the Pauli group on n qubits. But we no longer require the subgroup to be abelian. Okay, it doesn't have to be commuting. For such a subgroup, we can find a set of generators which fall into two groups. We have isotropic generators. Now these are generators that commute with all the generators, and symplectic, which come in anti-commuting pairs, which correspond to EBITs, but which commute with the rest of the generators in the isotropic space. Okay. So how do we go about finding a 6131 code? Well, we looked at classical coding theory, okay, and we looked at our friend, the Hamming code. Okay, and the Hamming code classically takes four logical bits and encodes it into seven physical bits and is able to correct a single bit error. So we take this parity check matrix and we remove the last column. Okay, and this still acts as a good parity check matrix, but now with a fewer number of physical bits. And then we take it and write it in a symplectic form with the H on the upper left and the bottom right. And then we take these binary string and write it out the Pauli matrices for this. Okay. So it turns out in this case that there are three Z types and there are three X types. Surprise, surprise, it's a CSS code. Further, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take these stabilizer generators and I'm going to put them in anti-commuting pairs. Okay. So we look at on the right side, ZX, Z type, X type, Z type, X type, Z type, and X type. And once I have it in this form, then I'm going to run an algorithm called the Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization procedure. And what that's going to give me is the minimum number of EBITs. So from there, I'm going to get this encoded set of stabilizers, okay, and the corresponding parity check matrix will give me its rank is going to give me the minimum number of EBITs that is required between Alice and Bob to resolve that anti-commutativity. So the way the Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization algorithm works as follows. So you have your generators on this side, on your left side. And what you're going to do is you're going to find the first anti-commuting pair. Okay, in this case, G1 and G2. And then you're going to process G3, G4, G5, and G6 by applying the following rule. If so let's say for all J, 3, 4, 5, 6, let's say we have J equal to 3. You're going to take G3 and update it if the symplectic inner product between G2 and GJ, if they commute, it's 0. And if it anti-commutes, it's 1. Okay. And so this is the rule you use to update G3, G4, G5, and G6. And once you've done that, you throw away your first two generators, G1 and G2. And then you look for another anti-commuting pair. And you run this algorithm again. But in this case, it turns out we have to stop. We can stop after the first iteration, because G3, G4, G5, G6 all commute. Okay, so we're actually done. And it turns out now, if we write the binary form of these generators, there's a parity check matrix corresponding to it, and we compute this this matrix, H, H3 transpose, and take its rank, it gives us the minimum number of feedbits required. That's for CSS code. For non-CSS code, we take the rank of H1, H2 transpose.
743 Hamming code parity check matrix. If you hadn't thrown away one of the columns, would that generate the standard 7-bit qubit code?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Okay, so you're sort of taking a 7-qubit code and quote throwing away unquote one of those qubits that's actually going to be the other half of Alice Bob's EQ here.
Yeah. So now the notation is an NKC, where C stands for the number of qubits here between Alice and Bob, and tagging this assisted quantum error correcting code is described by an N minus K by 2N parity check matrix H. Okay, once again, the code corresponds to the row space of this parity check matrix. And in general, it turns out that one can decompose this into two subspaces, like I said, an isotropic one and a symplectic one. So here I've shown the symplectic ones. So this is the parity check matrix corresponding to the unencoded stabilizer generators. These are the stabilizer generators on Alice's side. And these are the red are the symplectic subspace corresponding to Alice's half of the EBIT. And the blue corresponds to the isotropic subspace. Okay. So once again, you have the encoded stabilizers on the right side. And then you get the full stabilizer when you add the full commuting set when you add Bob's half of the EBIT. And this is the unencoded stabilizer on the left side. And once again, to find the encoding circuit, we proceed in the same way we did for the 6-qubit code by taking the generators on Alice's side, because it's the local unitary, and applying the same sort of matrix reductions to get into this form on the left side, where you have ancillas on qubits 2, 3, 4, and 5. Your information qubit lives on qubit 6. And here, this is Alice's half of an EBIT. Okay. So in the picture, phi plus is your EBIT. So this is the half of Bob's EBIT going through. Noiseless, we're not doing anything with it. This is Alice's half, your ancillas, and your information qubit. And once again, you get the circuit by taking these gates and applying them in reverse order. So now the correctable error set S is defined in the same way. So if U and U prime are these strings in your correctable error set and they're distinct, then you ought to get two distinct errors. You ought to get distinct syndromes, or your code is part of a degenerate code. The code space in this case is now defined as simultaneous plus one eigenspace of stabilizer generators. So you have the n physical qubits, and you add the c EBITs, okay, and you union it with a set corresponding to stabilizer generators analysis, and that commutativity you resolve by adding c EBITs z and x. And once again, decoding involves measuring the error syndromes. That is a simultaneous eigenvector of the stabilized generators. So we can now compare the properties of an entanglement-assisted quantum error correcting code to those of an ordinary QECC. Once again, the code corresponds to a classical code over a symplectic space. It no longer needs to be dual-containing. Okay. The error correcting conditions are almost the same as classical. Once again, we have the degeneracy. And correction consists of measuring an error syndrome and performing the appropriate correcting action, okay, a unitary. So it actually turns out that the entanglement-assisted 6-qubit code can actually correct also errors on Bob's side. It is actually equivalent to the Steen code. And the way to see this is you take your set of generators, okay, and you replace G1 with the product of G1, G2, and G3. And you can replace G5 with the product of G5 and G6. So you get your modified stabilized generators on the right. Interchange G4 with G5 and swap columns C2 and C3, C1 and C5. And then once you cyclically permute these columns once, you exactly get the steam flow stabilizer. Towards the end, we showed this proposition, proved this proposition in the paper, which again has the same flavor of the proof as the non-existence of CSS 6-qubit code. And basically says there does not exist an N131 entanglement system with CSS code for N less than 6 that corrects an arbitrary single qubit error on Alice's side. Yeah.
So it seems like what you just showed was that if you take the stabilizer matrix for this code, uh-huh. and you do some operations on it that don't actually change the stabilizer, voila, it's the steam code stabilizer, right?
Okay. And actually, in the paper, we actually have the generalization where you can, so for example, you could have started here with a 713 code, and you convert it into an N minus 1, 131 code. Okay.
You mean an N, you start with
N13. N13, and you can take one of those qubits and put it as half of even on the Allison Bob side.
So I guess what I'm missing here is you started with this matrix, and then you showed that it's actually the same as the steam code stabilizer. Why didn't we just start with the steam code stabilizer in the first place? Is there something special about that last qubit, or?
No, there's nothing special about the last qubit. Actually, can you do this with 2 qubits? Because it's distance 3, so 2 qubits still will have the intensity-density matrix. So I think you could move 2 qubits over. If you take 7-qubit code, take code word of 7-qubit code, take any 2 qubits out, they'll have the intensity-density matrix.
Right.
So they'll be maximally entangled mm-hmm. with the rest of the state. So I think that you could move them over to Bob's side.
Yeah.
I think this makes it 5-1-3.
Yeah, so that's something that poses as an open problem. And we don't know, because it depends on how complicated your entanglement is with the rest of the qubits. And could you do it with 3 qubits? Could you take 3 qubits over?
No, because 3 qubits, you have some information about the states.
Mm.
With 2 qubits, I mean, it can only correct for one error, and it can't detect 2 errors. So
but the 2 qubits that you're moving over aren't going to have any errors on. The point is that they're maximally entangled with the rest of the state. So that's what you need. I mean,
I guess I'm asking why you can say that 2 qubits don't have any information about the encoded state.
This is three non-degenerate code. Well, it's distance three code. So if you have a distance d code, d minus 1 qubits have no information. If it's a degenerate code, they might not be entangled properly. But it's a non-degenerate code, so they are entangled, and they're maximally entangled. And so it seems like you could make them into. I mean, it could be I'm missing something subtle, but it seems like it's a general construction. And actually, I suspect it's in one of those Papenacker papers, this construction.
I haven't seen them that close. So in conclusion, we gave a proof as to why the 6-qubit code does not have a CSS structure. So one of the questions is, can the above be generalized to higher distance CSS codes? That is, can we take this construction and apply the same technique to higher distance codes? So we give an example of the smallest subsystem code that uses just 1 gauge qubit. And then we give an example of the smallest entanglement-assisted CSS code. And again, the question is, can this proof technique for the non-existence of an entanglement-assisted CSS code be generalized to higher distance EA codes? Or to EA codes that use more than 1 qubit? So I haven't explored these questions. And here are the people, Ogdian, Mark, Isaac, and Daniel. Okay, I guess this was short. Thanks. So right now, actually, I'm sort of working on quantum steganography right now with Todd. And it's quantum steganography, the notion that you can hide information in quantum messages. And this was a little bit of work was done by Julio Balacloche on this, but not a lot has been done, so we're kind of exploring that right now. Yeah. That's kind of interesting. It's fun for me at least. Yeah.
Can I ask an awkwardly general question about these entanglement assisted gates?
Yeah.
Can you go the other way? I mean, you're taking an ordinary CSS code and taking some of the qubits, one of the qubits, and creating an entanglement assisted code. Suppose I give you an entanglement assisted code. Can you send? Can you just take an entanglement out of the equation and build a higher number of qubits, physical qubits, error correction code?
Probably, I suspect you could.
Well, generally no, because you may be relying on the fact that the qubits on Bob's side have no errors.
So yeah, this is true. Yeah. So that has to be even be assumed as noiseless. And people, I guess, one of the things that Daniel mentioned was an interesting question would be, well, what if we allow a small amount of error on that on Bob's half of the event? Then how does that change the picture? Something that
well, what's before. A small amount of error in that context?
I don't know, epsilon times max, right? Epsilon is small.
I mean, in this, the error correction formalism, the amount of error never actually comes in, right? I mean, the 5 or 7 qubit code, they correct perfectly against any, you know, against a single qubit error of any strength, right? So it sort of seems like you have to extend the formalism beyond where it is to deal with the very idea of epsilon probability of error, right?
Yeah.
You could presumably entangle. You could, I mean, the entangled state between Alice and Bob that you're using could be a logically entangled state. It's actually instantiated on some. Well, could you get away with doing it that way? On some qubits that you could run an error correction routine on. So in actual fact, Alice and Bob share more entanglement, but you can error correct to any bit. Although at that point it becomes rather questionable exactly why you're using it.
But I mean, then you'd be in a situation where you could be saying this code, this entanglement assisted code is robust to any single qubit error, no matter what the probability, on one of the entangled bits. Right? And this code is actually robust to an arbitrary error on Bob's qubit. Because Bob's qubit is just 1 of 7. So you can lose Bob's qubit just as well as you can lose 1 of Alice's.
You can assume that you're going to have a
positive. Another somewhat general question. As I understand it, EA codes are. They're nice flushing out of formalism. For instance, they allow you to take arbitrary classical codes.
Yeah, that's the power, right? You can import any classical code and.
Right. Yeah. So the question is, are they practically good for anything? Can we imagine any scenario in which this would actually be genuinely useful?
I mean, it's a communication scenario, right? You know, Alice and Bob are separated by distance.
Right.
So, actually, in their paper, they also talk about catalytic codes, where you sort of are generating entanglement and then using it up to error correct, and then and it sort of goes into the cycle of producing entanglement, utilizing it for error correction, and then not doing anything for a while, and then using it again. It's in Todd and Minshew's catalytic error correction paper. I don't know, you might want to take a look at that first. Yeah.
But you said it enables more classical codes, right? So presumably you could get better rates than restricted quantum.
And the rates for entanglement codes, the way at least Davis defined it, is not k over n, but k minus c over n. So you sort of subtract off sort of the e-bits that you've taken into account.
Well, I'm sorry, yeah. Maybe you're about to say, see, I don't mean that you'll get better parameters than you could, but it might be easier to find good codes with, say, sparse generating sets when you remove the dual containing constraint because of the e-bits, right?
And actually, you can get some codes with better parameters.
Oh, okay.
Although not really necessarily asymptotically better, at least I don't know if any results like that. But you can, at least for some small codes, there are cases where there's a entanglement assisted code that no.
I see.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know if anyone's done work on the asymptotics of EA codes.
I think asymptotically pre-existing entanglement doesn't increase the capacity, right? Or is that?
No.
Q increases.
Well, so you mean if you account for it correctly, Q, if you have to subtract off the time when you use it. Obviously, if you can pre-entangle it, it does.
Sure.
But I don't know.
I thought that was the point of the resource theory stuff. No questions? Think about it.